Hello, everybody. This is Dr. Diana Wiley. I'm your host of Love, Lust, and Laughter. And with me for this show, once again, fortunately, is Lou Padgett. Hello, Lou.
Hello, Diana.
It's so nice to have you. I was thinking back to one of the first times you were, it may have been the first time you were on my radio show. It was when I was in Hawaii.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it was about late 2000. Or maybe early 2001. Anyway, we've known each other about 14 years.
Mm-hmm.
And we had a caller from one of the neighboring islands who had been married a long time. And
he actually
broke down crying because he wanted so much to be able to have intercourse with his wife, and he was experiencing erectile dysfunction. I know you'll remember that because
oh.
It was just such a moving call.
I mean, he said, finally I can talk to someone.
Yes, yes. And on this program, we occasionally get callers, and dear listening audience, I'm not making any judgments here, but of course we also know that a lot of the people who listen to the archived versions.
Mm-hmm.
Are you willing to give away a book if
sure.
somebody calls? Which one do you, because you've done this before.
I think the one would be the Great Lover Playbook.
That's right. And that's on your website, Lou Padgett, LouPaget.com.
Mm-hmm.
The Great Lover Playbook. And I want to tell our listening audience that you are an ASECT certified sex educator. And ASECT stands for American Association for Sex Educators, Counselors, and Teachers.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm about to go to their conference next week in Monterey.
Right, and therapist.
And therapist. Did I not say
teacher, but it's okay.
Oh, yeah, I'm sorry, and therapist, yes. So you are a certified sex educator through ASECT.
Mm-hmm.
And you're an international best-selling author and entrepreneur of 5 books translated into 28 languages. And your website is wonderful. And, of course, you are a very, very much in demand as an international speaker. And we're so glad to have you on this program, Love, Lust, and Laughter again.
Well, my pleasure. And it was an absolute delight getting ready for this show with you.
Yes, well, we had fun because some of the pre-interview talk was just personal talk, and I don't get to see or talk to you enough.
This is true.
Yeah. So, anyway, at least we can talk on the air, and I've also been on your radio program, and people can see about that on the website, too.
Mm-hmm.
Tell us a little bit about I think it's changed from Wednesday to Mondays?
Correct.
Okay.
I am on toginet.com, and that's toginet.com. And I just did a post on both Facebook and Twitter that I was going to be on your show, Diana.
Oh, good.
People can, you know, send something to me through that. And what my show is about is like Sex Talk with Lou.
Uh-huh.
And what you and I had said we would look at for this show is sex in the news.
Yes.
Because what I know as an educator, one of the most important things that you have to be aware of is what's going on and what information are people being given?
Yes.
Because even though there may be some tremendous research and people doing work, you know, within a university or college setting, that usually has such a small exposure, but the social media, all of the things that people are watching with a couple of keystrokes, click, 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 those are the things they're downloading. And many times they're not getting the foundational information that really would benefit them.
And you're so good at sifting through all this information, whether it's about, well, of course, you've even become a consumer's digest person about sex toys. And you do, in fact, you do combine your vast knowledge, general knowledge of things sexual, with your hard science background.
Mm-hmm.
Can you tell our audience what's your hard science background?
Okay, when I say hard science, I'm referring to biology, botany, microbiology, and zoology. And really what I'm looking at is looking at the physical. You can't, you know, this isn't like a judgment about what you're looking at. You actually are seeing this. Like gross anatomy means anatomy, as you probably know, that you see with your eyes.
Yes.
So it's like right there in front of you. And what I do, and I know what happens for many people, because having been a sciences major,
mm-hmm.
I know, and it just makes me crazy, that many people get bullied by people who are in sciences. And, you know, and unfortunately, many MDs, as this one gentleman has referred to them as minor deities, they have that complex.
Yes, yes.
They think
how appropriate.
They think that they have, you know, the sole, you know, delivery of information. And no, they don't.
Mm-hmm.
The important thing is I don't want people to get beaten up by someone who, you know, has a superior attitude of I know more. I want people to understand science is there as your friend to have things make sense. And because I have the hard sciences background, I can read the papers. I know what I'm looking at. And many times I go like this, what the did you just say here?
Uh-huh.
You just totally made that up.
Exactly, exactly. So you have a very good filter, an informed filter.
Mm-hmm. And I just, and like any other person who is constantly around new information, you have to keep up with the information.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you don't have to if you don't want to, but then
right.
It's like someone who dresses in an outfit that looked good in the 90s. If your outfit looks like it was in the 90s, people are going to assume your information is from the 90s.
That's true. Or if you have makeup that still looks like the 90s or a hairdo or something
exactly.
like that.
Now,
you know, you're stuck.
Exactly. Now, that may have been when you felt you were your most powerful.
Mm-hmm.
Yet, I've watched speakers and people who, they use terms that are no longer current. And even though the information they may be delivering is good, people tune them out.
Because they're just somehow not current.
Well, they're not connected in.
And
so
connected
people,
in.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and people go, oh, well, that's not. So literally, when I did my show yesterday, which now is Monday from 2 to 3 p.m.,
Monday, 2 to 3,
yeah,
yes.
Pacific time.
Mm-hmm.
And I titled it Sex in the News.
Mm-hmm.
But what I really should have titled it, that it is more like Out of Touch Sex in the News. Because there were many of the articles, and these are online. I just went through all kinds of different websites and publishings to look at what are the things that are being, you know, flagged up for people to see that they might go, oh, let me look at that.
Mm-hmm.
And some
mm-hmm.
of them were just appalling. Yet, what happens is when the word gets put on a screen like that, for some reason people automatically go, oh, well, they must really know what they're talking about. No, not necessarily.
No. It is amazing how many people think that when they see something online, it's got to be the gospel truth.
No, and here's one of the things. The other day, I was looking at a particular publication, or supposed publication.
Yes.
And it was put on a website called PLOS-1, which stands for the acronym of P, capital P, capital L, lowercase O, and then capital case S, is Public Library of Science.
Ooh.
Now, that really is, in essence, a self-publishing site for supposed scientific and, you know, other academic papers. But they actually say themselves that it is an online platform that employs a publish first, judge later methodology, and it doesn't exclude things that based on the lack of perceived importance or adherence to a scientific field. So,
goodness. So they do a form of a disclaimer.
They do a form of the disclaimer, but no one looks at it.
But no one, yeah.
So I'm looking at this, and what it was mm-hmm. is something that was, I'm your tango expert.
Mm-hmm.
And I happened to see that someone had written, the weird thing that makes people unsupportive of gay marriage. And I looked at this and I went, okay, what exactly do they have to say here? And if you start, and this is what I want people to look at and become shrewd consumers of information about sexuality.
Mm-hmm.
Look at who published it.
Mm-hmm.
Look at where it's published. and look at what the motivation is. Because in most papers, they have what they refer to as a hypothesis.
Yeah.
Big word for saying, I want to prove what I'm thinking. That's really what it boils down to.
I want to prove what I'm thinking.
So they hypothesis before I get there.
Mm-hmm.
And so what their hypothesis was is that somehow they came up with this idea that exposure to a disgusting smell would increase feelings of disgust, which in turn would activate a harm avoidance system in your brain, and you would be motivated and have a motivated desire. And they literally wrote this for purity.
Oh my goodness!
Not cleanliness, purity.
Wait, but who wrote this?
Okay, this is the whole and the weird. What they have done is it's a group of so-called scientists from the University of Arkansas. Who enrolled 57 people to answer a questionnaire, and they said they were about socio-political views of things. Now, socio-political, and they wanted to know about porn, abortion, and same-sex marriage. Why didn't they just say they wanted to know their questionnaire based on their views about sexuality? Because each one of those happens to be smack dab in that subject category.
Sure.
Then what they wanted to do is they then had one group of the people that they put into a room by themselves answering these questions. Then they put another group of people into a room that had just a foul smell in it.
Yep.
So this is where they came up with the, if you smell something really bad, it is going to cause you to go against same-sex marriage. What they forgot to let people know when they wrote this, things that will make people unsupportive of gay marriage, the people that they had enrolled in this, actually, these participants flat out identified as being fairly conservative to begin with. So, to put it mildly, just smelling something is not going to be an indicator of what you think about something. You might think, I'd like to get out of this room.
Sure.
Or my, you know, oh my Lord, that is just disgusting. But really what they are doing, they are taking a banana, they're trying to say it's related to a pineapple, and then they're serving it up as a salad and telling you that it is a meat entree. None of them are matching up. And
how well you describe it, Lou, that's vivid.
Yeah, and the one woman who wrote this article I thought was hilarious, and she said they already, you know, they're talking about that the participants identified as being conservative to begin with. So that is what they refer to as their associative learning. They already have that thought. They already have that attitude. So her final comment was, what bothers me about this study is that the research depicts the participants as being dissuaded against gay marriage entirely because of a nasty odor. But a bigot is a bigot, and a stinky bigot can't suddenly come out smelling like a rose.
Well, indeed. A bigot is a bigot. And, of course, we've had
lots of that in the news.
Lots of that in the news with
late.
Sterling and his bigoted mind.
But, you know,
mind.
Here's the thing. Again, let's go back to people who are in very rarefied air of money and influence have typically been able to do and say whatever they wanted without people saying, no, don't do that.
And actually, maybe we're jumping ahead faster than you want to, but that's what Monica Lewinsky said in her piece in Vanity Fair, and we were going to talk about this because she was her excerpts from that were on AOL.com.
And
she says that the Clintons and they had all this power, and so she got scapegoated.
Well, to say that she got scapegoated, I think, is an absolute understatement. And what?
Oh, of course it is. And I liked what she wrote, the excerpt that I'm going to get the whole magazine, though, I think, because she said, how do I find and give purpose to my past? And she decided it was to get involved with efforts on behalf of victims of online humiliation and harassment and to start speaking on this topic in public forums. Bravo, Monica. You know, that's really giving some purpose.
Because truly...
to this huge humiliation she had.
Well, let's talk about the one thing that often happens in online bullying. It's as a result of someone calling a girl. It's the slut shaming. Mm-hmm. And I don't think we could get to a bigger level of slut shaming than what happened to Monica.
Yes, and it was in 1998, so it was probably the first really big story that went global, thanks to the Drudge Report.
Right, well, the Drudge Report, and then also, what was his name, Kenneth Lay?
Kenneth Starr,
mm-hmm. who was the guy who just kept dragging her through the mud. Now, here is a young woman. The power inequality between the President of the United States and a young intern... Hello, and we think that we go after her. She got thrown under the bus by every single person.
Yes.
The woman, Linda What's-Her-Nose, who was supposedly her friend.
Yeah.
The woman who was the publisher who said, by all means, save the dress. And she...
What's-Her-Nose is an important description, although I think she later had a nose job.
She did.
Yeah. Anyway, go on, Lou.
But the important thing about this is that we now have an awareness as a result of the unfortunate suicides and all of the, you know, the attacks and bullying, the online bullying that is occurring, particularly to girls, is often as a result of perceived sexual behavior or sexual behavior.
Mm-hmm.
And for Monica, she was, for 10 years, she has been in a self-imposed exile because of the judgment against her and the bullying that just never stopped. And I applaud her.
I do, too.
And I think, I would like to see the light turned on a little more squarely on Clinton and his activity of saying and acting like he can just walk scot-free of things that he does that ruin people's lives.
Well, I don't think he's going to do it. For one thing, his wife may be running for president, and then the real scrutiny will be on both Clintons.
Again, well, you know, bless them if they wish to be in an office and win a popularity poll. But the real result of that is that they want to have the influence and follow up on that.
I was very touched when Monica Lewinsky said that she, in this Vanity Fair piece, that she was suicidal and her mother did not leave her side even when she was sleeping because her mother knew the extent of the humiliation that occurred right after and then continued. But she was suicidal. So when that young man jumped off the bridge a couple of years ago...
He was a Columbia student or something?
And he was filmed, unbeknownst to him, kissing a male and... In his dorm room.
In his own dorm room, and it was his former, it was his roommate who filmed it, yes.
Yeah, terrible, terrible. And then he jumped off a bridge, and he was apparently a gifted violinist or something like that. And Monica said when she read that, I think his name was Scarletti or something, when she read that, she just so identified, and it helped her come up with this idea that she would... get involved.
To be there as a form of support for people.
For people with online humiliation and harassment.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, I applaud her and I say thank you so much to the gentleman at Vanity Fair who has been her friend through this, who urged her to write the article for Vanity Fair. Mm-hmm. I mean, let's put it this way. Let's start from the brass tacks in the beginning of this recipe. She didn't get to be an intern at the White House because she was an idiot.
No, in fact, my daughter was an intern at the White House when she was at Georgetown. And you've met my daughter.
Mm-hmm.
When
yes.
she was a student at Georgetown University. And, of course, Clinton wouldn't have dared to approach her. But because I have we're not friends too much anymore because I'm out of touch with him. But as you know, I have been friends with Clinton. And so, but she earned it. She really earned that internship, and she was good, and she got to walk the cat socks on a leash. And and she tells a story about, well, my daughter is very bright, maternal bias aside, but anyway, she tells a story about how Joe Montana, the
football player,
Yeah, the football player, the quarterback for the 49ers.
Mm-hmm.
He was there with his wife and three little kids in the Oval Office, and they called my daughter in because the kids were just unruly and pulling stuff off the president's desk, and so she had to babysit those kids. Now, I think mostly when you're an intern, you do more things than walk the cat and babysit. And in fact, she was in the visitor's office, so she did a lot of stuff.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, what you do when you're an intern is what needs to be done at that very moment.
That's right. That's right.
And you do it because they know that you're capable and you're an able-bodied person. But to complete the little cycle with Monica Lewinsky and put a little bow on it here,
mm-hmm.
I say high five for you, girl. I'm mm-hmm. going to, you know, make a point of putting on my site, you know, kudos to you. And, you know, I so look forward to hearing and seeing, you know, more of the work that she's going to do, because talk about someone who has gone through, you know, trial by fire, and it never let up, Diana.
It never let up. Yeah.
And you know, here's one thing I would call Clinton on the carpet for. As a result of him making, you know, oral sex is not sex,
mm-hmm.
we have a generation now who have that same attitude.
Mm-hmm. I know.
And I don't know where in sex, oral sex, falls out of. So I don't know how sex isn't part of oral sex. It is. And that was a whole group of kids grew up with that that sort of value system.
Mm-hmm.
And I think people need to take responsibility for their actions and for what they say. And I think in this one, Clinton did not.
He did not. I agree. Of course, I know him to be a wonderful man in so many other ways, but I think there is a fatal flaw there. I hate to say it, but I think it's true.
I think it's true. Now, are we doing a break at half past?
Yeah.
Okay.
Just unlike your program, it, 'cause I think you have four
three.
Breaks?
I have three.
Three. And so I just have one at half past, and it'll
okay.
go for a couple of minutes.
Okay.
So we are encouraging people to read the whole story. They can also read parts of it if they go on AOL.com. But going back to something else that you mentioned, the Huffington Post,
mm-hmm.
Famous nude paintings updated to fit today's beauty standards. It's fascinating. You see these classic
mm-hmm.
paintings
mm-hmm.
with these voluptuous, gorgeous women.
Mm-hmm.
And then they right in front of your eyes, they're photoshopped.
Right. Now, and here's the thing I think people have to be aware of.
Mm-hmm.
In history, a sign of wealth was being heavy. Because you
right.
had enough to eat.
Mm-hmm, exactly.
You, and the other sign of wealth was white skin. You weren't
mm-hmm.
in the sun. You weren't working.
Right, that's right.
And so, and culturally, the white skin thing has carried over in many cultures.
Yes, because even in, I know that in Jamaica, for example, the lighter the skin, the more prestige they have, at least last time I checked, which was years ago.
Yeah, and
in
well,
Jamaica.
And in Asia, in Southeast Asia,
mm-hmm.
It is the light skin is highly desirable. Well, it was also the same thing in, you know, these, you know, famous nude paintings. But what they also had, I have an art history background. So when I look at these, there was also the pose of that was the woman that you wanted. First off, she had enough to eat, and she was fertile.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And she
had wider hips, which meant she could probably deliver the baby better.
Right. And yet, you know, as if they really knew that because it was actually the birth canal, but their assumption was that.
Right.
And but
right.
really, when I looked at this and I saw how sad these images look. I mean, we talked about where do we and how do we give women and men a good feeling about their body image?
Mm-hmm.
And where does it start? And does it start with a mother who says, I think you know, you are just fine the way you are? Or is it a friends who make comments? I know some women who their mother made such a scene about them having to lose weight because it was a reflection on her.
Right, exactly. And those women are often fairly narcissistic, so then it becomes what's called a narcissistic wound.
Yeah.
It's reflected back on mother. Actually, the statistics are very clear because I've worked with eating disorders, and women are much more likely to become bulimic or anorexic if they've had a mother with body image issues. And I talked to one client who was dragged at the age of 7 to Weight Watchers meetings. And her mother was always watching what she ate, so consequently she was on her first diet at age 9.
Well, I have a friend of mine who, this is a friend of mine who was in New York, and speaking of body images, and her mother was the first person I ever knew of, and this was mid-80s, that I was in school in New York, and her mother was one of the first who I ever knew of who had suffered, like, to suffered until she killed herself as a result of it.
Oh.
That with anorexia.
Oh, well, yeah, that's right. In fact, back when I used to work much more with eating disorders, I stopped working with anorexics because their electrolytes could be so difficult and going all up and down and up and down, and they'd often have to be hospitalized.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean,
and
they, listen,
so
you have your
they're better off working with a psychiatrist who has hospital privileges.
Yeah, to me, when I look, you don't fool around with the electrolytes and the things that have to make your muscles contract and your heart go.
Mm-hmm.
You can if you want, but you do so at your own risk. But the end result for this friend of mine, even though she said she did not have any eating issues, massive.
Oh, sure.
She would eat things to the point of she would gorge on foods that she was actually highly allergic to. And her business and her job was to eat these foods that she was allergic to.
Oh, dear.
So then
would she naturally throw up?
Oh, sometimes, yeah.
Yeah.
But then she would just be sick. And her whole system really couldn't deal with it. But to go back to the body image things, I like seeing now online that we have women who have had mastectomies or surgery, and they're showing it in a different way.
That's very healthy.
They're saying, look, this is what it is. There is a woman who I am going to be speaking with her. A friend of mine introduced me to her, and she has a site where she talks about what your body actually looks like after children. And she was a former bodybuilding, you know, type who, you know, everything is about what this muscle group looks like, what that looks like. And she put together a site that properly validated what she felt showed a woman's body after it has produced and created life.
Yeah, I'm so glad that I was able to have a daughter and then a son, but I was lamenting with my fiancé, I get to say now, Brian. We were actually looking at my most recent Playboy, and you know, there's beautiful women, and I have subscribed for years, although same daughter said, oh, you mom, when she was a teenager, you must be a lesbian. Why do you get Playboy? No, I appreciate the beautiful bodies, but I also get it for the sexual advisor section, which Michael Castleman says he's never, when he was on the advisor team for 5 years, he never found them in a mistake, and I've never found them in a mistake. It's a very good thing. But anyway, Playboy. They're
and who's writing it now?
Oh,
Chip Rowe?
It was Chip Rowe, or it was James Peterson for a while.
Yeah,
I think
it was
it's
James
Chip.
Peterson, and then it became Chip.
I think it's Chip Rowe, but I think he's got a team, you know.
Uh huh.
But anyway, I'm looking at this with Brian, and I'm saying, oh, sometimes I wish I had a 20-something body again. And he said, don't we all? But he loves my body just as it is, which I so appreciate because it is a responsive body. And the most frequent setting for self-doubt is in the bedroom. And fortunately, I got past all that. And as a sex therapist, I want to examine how does a woman's image of her body affect her sexuality
mm-hmm.
and her relationship with her partner.
And, Diana, you were very lucky in the family you were raised in with the value system that they had. You basically came through that whole sexuality thing unscathed with a solid sense of yourself.
Thank you, Lou. I often count my blessings about that
mm-hmm.
because it helped. My mother had some issues about chubby thighs, and so I did too, but I got past it. I think when I was less confident, a lover might compliment my body, and I'd think to myself, oh, but doesn't he see my thighs?
And it's so true what I've had men say to me when I was writing my books and doing seminars. They
yeah.
said, look, by the time I'm in bed with a woman, I'm not in bed with her thighs. I'm in bed with her.
Exactly. And a man might notice the woman's body if he's with a new lover for about 2 minutes. And then he's just so grateful to have her naked
mm-hmm.
and there.
Yes, exactly. Now, are we coming up to our break?
Oh, my goodness. Thank you. We're past it. We got to go. Thank you. Jeez. We're having so much fun talking about nudity. And okay.
Everything else. Okay.
We'll be right back. So stay with us, please. Thank you, Liz.
You're welcome.
We're back. This is Dr. Diana Wiley, your host of Love, Lust, and Laughter. And my fascinating guest and friend is Lou Padgett. I have just a couple of more things to say about body image.
Mm-hmm.
And then we're going to move on to, at your suggestion, to something that was on the Huffington Post, Rent-A-Gent,
mm-hmm.
and the Santa Barbara killings,
right.
which all recent things in the news. But on body image thing, I sometimes call this self-image neurosis. And it is, I have found in the 32 years I've been doing this work, it's often a way to avoid being sexual. It's sort of an excuse not to abandon yourself to another. Because if the woman's fixated on the girth of her thighs or the tilt of her breasts, so and so on, she's then not really tuning into pleasure, not able to relax and enjoy pleasure. And
do you think it's avoiding pleasure or not entitled to pleasure?
Well, very good point. I think it can be both, or one or the other, not
if
entitled.
If I looked this way, it would be, then I would be entitled to have this, or someone would feel
yes.
better about me. Yeah.
Yes, and it's the idea that the old belief that you have to love your body before you can change it. It's the opposite of that. You know, some people say, oh, well, if I lose 10 pounds, then I can enjoy my body.
Truly. And, you know, we talked about that yesterday because as an identical twin, I grew up knowing what your body looked like, what
mm-hmm.
The clothes you were wearing, that did not determine who found you attractive because my sister and I are identical twins.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so I knew there was always something that each one of us has inside of us
mm-hmm.
that is uniquely us that makes us appealing.
Mm-hmm.
And it has been like that since we were little units.
Yeah.
So
wow.
I
little units, I like how you express
yes.
it. Yeah.
And when you are,
mm-hmm.
it's that you just know some people are, you have more fun with other people, and just because we looked identical, people found me. I had one set of friends, and she had another set of friends.
Because you looked the same, but you were really different personalities.
Correct. And
mm-hmm.
and the same thing continued when we started dating.
Uh-huh.
I was never the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
So,
well, it's fascinating. Well, a lot of people want to know what to do about poor body image. And I answer simply cultivate the ability to appreciate your uniqueness. Because when you start to appreciate your imperfections as, I say, endearing distinctions, you will then have begun to love yourself in a way that allows you to love others.
Well,
you got to love yourself, and then you can love others.
I'll use an example of a woman who is known worldwide, and I've been brought in to do a presentation for her. And people, you know, must remain very, you know, calm and confident with the fact that I never say who I've spoken to, ever.
Right, right, I know.
And, you know, so
you,
I'm...
You maintain confidentiality.
Right, I'm like the... I'm
very
the bank
well.
Vault.
Uh-huh.
But what I... She was just about to go on a date, her first date, with this individual, and she was totally nervous about it. And she said, oh, God, now what am I going to do if, you know, what am I going to do if I have to get undressed in front of this man? He's going to see my stretch marks.
Mm.
And I looked at her, and I said, now you have to understand, I've never met this woman before in my life. I, of course, know about her. And I looked at her, and I said, let me ask you something. What's mm-hmm. the thing that you love most in this world?
Uh-huh.
And without a hesitation, she said, my child. I said, okay. I said, can you possibly consider that those marks are as a result of creating a life that you love more than anything?
Beautiful, Lou. What a great response.
And she sort of went, and I said, and let me tell you something. If mm-hmm. a man has an issue with a woman who has given birth with the fact that she has stretch marks, you should just kick him to the curb.
Really?
Okay?
Yeah.
I mean, that's just not someone you want to be around.
Exactly.
It's okay if he has that attitude, but that is not someone who is being organic with you. And I said, let me tell you, I happen to know a physician who is not married yet, has never, you know, didn't have a wife who, you know, had children. And he said, I have to tell you, he said, Lou, this may be really weird or unusual, but he said, I find stretch marks on women so sexy because I know it means that they are a mother.
Yes, and mothers good mothers can't be selfish.
Well, the moment you're a mother, it's like, that's it, kiddies.
yeah, that's
so,
right.
And
also, I think women with all of these issues need to recognize that the man this woman might be making love to, he'll have as many endearing distinctions as you do. Maybe a paunch, maybe two thin legs, maybe a bald spot, whatever. But he's going to have some endearing distinctions as well.
And many of the things that happen with your body, whether it's the size of your thighs or your calves or your ankles,
yeah.
a lot of those things, that's your DNA. It has nothing to do with anything else.
Right.
And, you know, when we talk about giving couples things where they can look at and see something that is the real world, I really like the sex therapy video series
mm-hmm.
that Bill Staton
oh, yes.
put together. And the one that they did with couples, they actually show a young woman who obviously has had children. She has a tummy. She's got stretch marks. And she looks like a woman who has had children. And that's
right.
who the majority of women are. So, I mean, yeah, it's Joy Davidson, Herb Samuels, and Bill Staton, Dr. William Staton. So are we ready to move to...
Yeah, we are. I just wanted to cap this body image thing, because this is what I say to a number of my female clients who are married or in a relationship and who have body image issues. I say, you know, in order to love another, it's important to respect his choice of you as a worthy lover.
Correct.
So with this kind of self-respect, it's easier to forget, you know, the precise physical boundaries in the warm and sensual sexual world that two people can make together.
Well, and the important thing about, and I say this, and you've heard me say it,
mm-hmm.
when you are being sexual with someone, it is your body saying that words cannot, what words cannot.
Your body, I like that very much.
And you know
yeah.
who told me that?
Yeah.
Dr. Mark Ganem.
Oh, and now he's died.
Yes,
That's right.
He died in, it was in Sweden, right? He was in
French, and
no,
remember?
He was in Gotburg for the WASP.
Oh, you're right. You're right, but remember he was the head of the meeting we both went to, the World Congress for Sexology in Paris, in 2001, and he was
the president then.
Yeah. Yep. So repeat that one more time. I like that. Your body is saying...
It is when you are... I can put my accent on it. Lou, when you are making love, it is your body saying what words cannot.
Yeah.
He'd always go like this, Lou.
Yeah, and he was a renowned
OBGYN,
yeah.
Mm-hmm. And so to me, what I want people to know is the nonsense of who has, you know, the most perfect body is nonsense.
Mm-hmm.
And if anyone looks at, I mean, even the models are photoshopped because they don't think that they look good enough as is. So what I want to make sure that we touch on, because I think this is a is the unfortunate killings in Santa Barbara.
Oh, terrible.
And that it is being attributed to his being a virgin, to his women rejecting him. And when I went on and I was looking at your site, I realized that Peter Bregan, who I spoke of, and who was created the Prozac defense as a result of the impact of Prozac when someone goes on and when they go off, the homicidality and suicidality.
Uh-huh.
He's one of the hosts on your radio programs.
Oh, a PRN.
Yes.
Oh, well, you know more than I do. I guess I need to spend a little more time on the PRN site.
I was flipping through and I went, oh my gosh.
Yeah.
But what I think what people need to really be paying attention to, and interestingly enough for me, one of the first things I said is that he hadn't seen a psychiatrist in 2 years, but he'd been seeing a psychologist.
Mm.
But bottom line is the behavior of how he switched was something that they'll never say it, and I doubt they'll talk about it, but I bet you can count on the fact that there are some medications that he was on that triggered parts of that behavior.
It could very well be. I mean, it's not so simple. There was a story that was from the New York Times in this morning's Seattle Times that I read, and it said that this guy, Elliot Rodger, was a lonely and frustrated virgin, and that in his tapes that he left, he said, "I, in all my magnificence and power, I will not let this fly. It's an injustice that needs to be dealt with." This is a very disturbed young man.
Well, that part they did know. However, now, again, you and I were not there and we weren't treating him. But what I want people to know is that people weighing in and saying it's about sex education at colleges that is a thing that is a, you know, has been a contribution to why this guy was doing it. And this happens to be an individual by the name of Warner Todd Houston who makes this comment and saying that sex education is the thing that, you know, contributed to him being like this. I hardly think so.
Mm-hmm.
And but for him, this is when I talked about being out of touch.
Mm-hmm.
This guy has no idea. He was at college a long time ago, and he doesn't know what is wanted on college campuses in the form of information, and that they are saying, "Listen, we need to know about this. We need to know about that." The bottom line with Elliot Rodger, yes, he had issues. That is no question. However, it is not one thing that contributed to it. This was a buildup of years.
Of course.
And when the person said, and he went from being very meek and mild to all of a sudden just completely different, very aggressive personality.
And I think you're right. He could have been a borderline personality disorder. He could have, the medications could have contributed, and especially if they were not titrated correctly. But still, there's something very deep and disturbing in this young man who then took his own life, which is probably just as well.
Well, and here's what you and I also probably both know.
Mm-hmm.
We're only getting a very sanitized version of what this news is.
Oh, yeah. Say more about that.
We are not being told what they actually saw. We are being presented with material that is ostensibly written by him, but we don't know. We have a media that likes to control everything that comes across. And here's what I tell people. If you really want to know what the news is for the day, get up early. And didn't your daughter work for NPR for a while?
Yeah, and now she works for CBC up in Canada.
Okay.
Part-time.
And NPR...
Which is Canadian Broadcasting,
right.
Just for people who don't know.
Right.
Yeah.
NPR, first thing in the morning, they're just reading off news feeds. So no one's editing what they're saying. So you're getting the news as it comes across the wire because they make a choice on what thing they're going to be talking about. Now, so I think that people need to take a step back, not get as involved in all the minutia, and look at that you have a young man who obviously had some serious issues, and virginity was one of them, but the reason that he wasn't connecting with people was a whole, it was a cascade of personality issues.
Absolutely.
And behaviors.
Absolutely, because the photograph of him, you know, he doesn't look, he looks okay.
Yeah.
You know.
He was.
But it was, you're right, he wasn't connecting with people, he was.
No.
Women would pick up that, oh, he's weird.
Hey, listen, everyone picks up when someone's like a little bit different. We have that as, that's why we have what you call the sixth sense and intuition. Hello, thank you. So that's what I want people to do is look at, look, this is not something that's going to be going away. We have people who are angry, whether they are women, whether they are men. I just think there's an individual who just got fired from a website that he's helped create because he made a completely inappropriate comment about Elliot Rodgers' sister, and it was so bad on so many levels.
Yeah.
He should have known to just
leave it alone.
Stop it. And so he just got fired for that comment. Another thing that I'd like to talk about that happened last Friday,
yes,
in social media, is the Nico Case Twitter rant that was as the result of Playboy.com making a comment about her new album, The Worst Things Get. And
now you'll have to tell me about this because I didn't really do my homework on it.
Oh well, don't even worry. What happened is Playboy.com made a comment on talking about Nico Case and the fact that she was, you know, they really liked this as a woman in music. They really liked her latest album. It went sideways, just frickin' sideways. And she said, she told them, you know, look, I am not a woman in music. I am a fucking musician in music. And then she's followed up with lines, and by the way, you know, pussy, you know, get with the times here. So what she was, again, we talk about that you need to have a sensitivity of who and what the audience is that you're speaking into when you are dealing with sexuality and when you're dealing with relationships. For her, she was, what hit her button, the comment, which I'm sure she gets all the time, which most women do, and most men have no idea that that's what we end up, you know, getting subjected to.
And I know this is a very complex topic, but what are your opinions about these clueless men in this regard?
I think that when they have a daughter or when they have a girlfriend who goes completely frickin' sideways on them, they'll get it. Okay?
Because these are close relationships, and they'll have a better understanding. But,
yeah.
But what?
And, you know, she, the thing about when you're talking to a group of people, you have to be aware and have someone who is that demographic or that peer group. And if you're worried, you know, just say, hey, listen, does this sound right? Ask them to vet it for you.
Oh, that's such a good idea. That's very sensible.
You know,
yes.
It's not, hey, look, I'm not the person who's, I know I'm not 22 years old, so I need to just get like, okay, let's tell me what's appropriate here. What term mm-hmm. do you prefer? Give me the information. Because I want to make sure that to the best of my ability, when it comes to talking about any area of sexuality, I can talk about it, you know, with a degree of awareness and being sensitive. We talk about this. We can be aware of issues that our gay colleagues and friends go through, but we're not gay. Mm-hmm. So we don't get the nuanced statements. I'll give people another way of looking at it. Let's say you know someone who is dying.
Mm-hmm.
That being the issue, any comment that has anything to do with time or dates or calendars, it's going to be highly sensitive for them.
Yeah.
Someone who has just miscarried, they are mm-hmm. going to be highly sensitive hearing about children or babies or pregnancy, even if you don't know it.
Right.
So it's like put on a pair of shoes and pay attention.
Or as the American Native Indians say, you've got to walk in somebody's moccasins a few miles before you can really get it.
Mm-hmm.
Or understand, as they put it. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's not that difficult. It's really about the being aware. So I believe she posted it. She said, I did not read it. She did not read the article. And she just was like, hey, look, you guys don't get it, and your sexist comments infuriate me.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So don't try and pat me on the head and say, you know, this stuff that she let them know what she was thinking. And what I found was interesting for me is how many of her peers weighed in and said, yep, I agree totally.
So if people want to read more about this, they can go to playboy.com.
Well, they can read the article on playboy.com.
Mm-hmm.
They can go on to Facebook and, you know, they can find Nico Case.
Mm-hmm.
They can go on and, you know, she had a comment, you know, it's May 21st. It was May 21st, 22nd. Then mm-hmm. the comment came in, but you can go on and you know do your own little research through her site.
But the bottom line is, because we're coming up to the end of the show, we need to stop a couple minutes before the top of the hour. The bottom line is that we really need to be we need to look at the news and not just accept that this is all the truth.
Totally. And
yeah.
if there's one message that we leave people with on this, mm-hmm. anytime you're looking at the message being given to you in the news, whether it's about sexuality, whether it's about, you know, news, whether it's about love, whatever it might be about, look at who wrote it and,
yeah.
you know, to follow, you know, that comment about follow the money. Who's getting the benefit?
Okay, that's good. Who wrote it
and
follow the money?
And who's going to get the main benefit from this article? Who's the group? Who, and you know, for some people, what they have is they have literal bots trolling the internet that will then write astonishingly negative and angry responses automatically to things that they are against.
It's unbelievable.
Yeah.
Well, we're coming to the end, but nobody did call in for your book.
Well,
but I noticed on your website, people can. What do they need to do to maybe get a book?
Well, what I have is the there's the free things on my site, and my site is going to be changing very soon. because yeah. I noticed
you needed to change the radio time.
Yeah, that has to be shifted and changed. Yeah. I mean, the whole thing is being redone.
Yeah. But it's such a good website. LouPaget.com.
Right. I've got some things there that are really fun, but it's going to be even more interactive. It's
oh,
going to
wonderful,
a lot
Lou.
More content. And that's my quest, and that's what I'm following up to try and get completed and done.
And you'll do it because you are a magnificent and beautiful woman.
Well, thank you, my dear. And thank you for having me on, Diana. As always, a pleasure and fun.
Oh, you're welcome. It is always my pleasure and so much fun to have a conversation with you, Lou, on the air, and then many people can benefit from your wisdom and your insights. And so thank you so much.
My pleasure, my dear.
And we'll do it again soon.
Absolutely.
Okay, bye-bye, everybody.
Bye now.
Bye.